Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for tuning in with us here. 4 o'clock hour. If you're a 9-to-5-er, 53 minutes, 24 seconds until you get to the end of the line here. So make sure you sprint through the tape there. But I appreciate so much you hanging with us here. As you get to that point, as we give attention to all things financial and economic, again, here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. As I mentioned, my name is Joshua Dobie. I'm a certified financial planner or CFP professional. We're talking on all manner of subjects here. Sometimes we're looking at things on a macro level, global level, if you will, taking a look at those kinds of things that surround us on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis that may affect us in terms of our financial lives. But we also seek to break it down to an individual level, making those kinds of things that are part of your experience, perhaps family members, colleagues as well, wanting it to be relevant to what's happening to you on the day-to-day. But you remember that in doing so, that nothing that we're talking about here is intended as a specific recommendation for you. Meaning that even though we're going to be talking about, and we will again today, specific companies, and we're going to look at some probably in a little bit more of a positive light, others in a little bit more of a negative light, again, that in doing so, nothing is intended as a specific recommendation for you. We strongly, strongly recommend that you reach out to your tax advisor, to your financial advisor, or if you'd like to reach out to us at North Main Financial Group, love to hear from you, love to chat about your particular financial situation, see if there are ways in which we might be able to be helpful to you. Online, you can find us at northmainfinancial.com. That's north like the direction, main like the street, financial.com, northmainfinancial.com. We have a contact page on there. Leave us an email address or a phone number. Let us know the most preferred and desirable ways for us to contact you, again, at northmainfinancial.com. You're also welcome to call us in the studio at any time, 844-STUDIO-4, 844-788-3464 in the studio. Love to hear from you. Love to understand what's hitting your radar screens and the financial news. Lots out there right now. I mean, my gosh, I feel like I say that every week. And to be fair, I do, I guess, because there's always a lot happening here. There's always a lot that's hitting our headlines, lots of things that are relevant to us, some things that we expect and maybe even positive, other things that we don't expect, maybe not so positive. But we want to touch on all of them, again, to be relevant and helpful to you as you're making your financial journey. All right, let's get into it. What's hot? Right? What's hot? This is the segment. I say it's a segment, but we spend a lot of time on what's hot here on Dollars and Cents because there are so many things that are happening out there, especially here, I feel like, over the last several months, where we're talking about what's moving in the markets. And as I mentioned to you several times, I got to raise my hand. I, for one, certainly as far as the equity markets are concerned, have been surprised at the amount of positive movement that we've had here, not just at the end of last year, which is especially November, December of 23 was very, very positive as measured by our most popular stock indices. But then coming in here now, and believe it or not, we're beyond the first quarter of 2024, also very positive when you're looking at the performance of, again, as measured by our most popular stock indices. So some very interesting things to talk about. Getting to the end of Q1 is sometimes a good time to pause and reflect and see where things are, where they've been, what we anticipate going forward. So we're going to be doing that again here today. Let's go ahead and get right into it. I'm going to touch on a big subject here. And you know me, I like to save some of that market stuff until the end of the show. So I'm going to intentionally do that. A little bit of a teaser. I want you to hang around. But we're in this What's Hot segment. These are things that are dotting our headlines as well. We've had a lot of questions on this here over the last, well, I would say a couple of months. I was going to say several weeks, but it really has been a couple of months. And this has to do with the FAFSA form for college aid, the free application for federal student aid. Often, very often, filled out by college students as they make their applications for aid, either from the university or from the U.S. government, from other entities, very often has to be completed. Actually, I would say right now we're in a space where almost every instance it has to be completed so that there can be an evaluation made about qualification possibilities for either federal or other kinds of student aid. I'm bringing this up because if you've been a part of the process, you're probably shaking your head and rolling your eyes now because you understand exactly what I'm going to say next. For those of you who may not be intimately involved with the process, the federal government through the Department of Education towards the end of last year shifted up how the application process goes forward. and they made it much more of an online. It was supposed to streamline the process a little bit. Well, they were very late in terms of coming out, and that's not my commentary to it. It didn't come out until the end of December. There were glitches in it. In some cases, folks couldn't even get into it until mid-January, which was about 3 or 4 months late relative to the application process. And now we're finding out, this is as reported by the Wall Street Journal, now we're finding out that about 20% of the applications which have been filed were done so incorrectly. And that's a huge delta, right? That's a huge variance over what is a normal year as far as that's concerned. The big deal, the reason why that's relevant, why I'm bringing it to you, is it has skewed or perhaps erroneously either assigned or has not assigned aid packages, because the index, which is computed from the FAFSA calculation, the index may have been computed erroneously. So I'm sharing that with you really as a big item. If you have a college student, if you are a college student, you have a family member who's a college student who has completed the FAFSA form, please, please, please have them double check on that with their institution, with the Department of Education. Make sure that there hasn't been any holdup or hiccup as far as that FAFSA form is concerned. It's a big deal. I mean, when you look at what is obvious, the huge cost of college education, huge impacts here, huge impacts, because that aid package may have affected, I would offer, the law of large numbers would say this, I would offer up, it has impacted how some folks are choosing which schools to attend, and then perhaps even which schools they are continuing to attend if they're in a particular university already. So when we're looking at that from an impact standpoint, it's huge. And we're talking about billions with a B number of dollars involved with this kind of appropriation. So very, very big deal. If you are a college student, if you are parents to a college student, grandparents to a college student, have one in your family or a friend you know who has completed the FAFSA form, please have them double check with their institution, with the Department of Education. Make sure that calculation was done correctly, because that can have huge implications in terms of the aid packages which are awarded, and obviously what amount you would need to come out of pocket in one way, shape, or form in order to be able to address the room, board, and tuition for this upcoming school year. So big deal when we're looking at that kind of thing. All right, let's keep going on what's odd here. This is something we're actually going to address a little bit later on in the What to Know segment, a little bit of a teaser there. I want you to hang around definitely for that. But it has to do with the negative performance in bonds here recently, and specifically when we're looking at the impacts of negative bond performance on the overall markets. Now, what does that mean? Well, when we're looking at bonds, generally speaking, when interest rates rise, the values go down. We're going to be talking about that in the What to Know segment here a little bit later on the show, but just wanted to give you that real quick 101 reminder of that to say what I'm going to say next. When you're looking at the valuation of bonds this year, had some pretty negative performance. Now, I'm not saying double-digit negative performance overall, but definitely some negative performance. Definitely something that's on our radar screen, because that's happening in conjunction with a very positive stock market. So what's the correlation on that? How does that exactly go together? It's something that's yet to be determined, but it's been very interesting to watch for the first quarter so far this year. Well, friends, I'm going to catch my breath as we take a few moments to hear from our sponsors here on WSIC. Appreciate so much you hanging with us here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial.
We'll have more of Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie following these brief messages on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC. It's Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us here. Second quarter football reference. I know I talk a lot about football here. It's baseball season, and I'm happy for baseball season here as well. Actually, I got to say, producer Bill, I mean, my Pittsburgh Pirates, I started out 5-0 this year.
They look good.
They've had a good start. Now, they're a young team. Right. So, I mean, they got a lot of growing to do, but I've been pretty impressed so far.
I'm all too familiar. We actually my Orioles are actually heading to Pittsburgh, I believe.
I hope the very best for you. I actually hope the very best for the Orioles, except when they play the Pirates.
Correct. So understood. Fair enough.
So at any rate, so it's that time of the year, and we like talking about that kind of stuff here on Dollars and Cents as well. But I appreciate you hanging with us here into the second quarter of today's Dollars and Cents show. Just before we were going to break there, we were talking about what we were seeing with bond performance. And you may have seen this, especially if you own a bond mutual fund or a bond ETF. That's where we see those kinds of things really come into play, where we see valuations move a little bit more because you don't own just one bond in a bond mutual fund or a bond exchange-traded fund. You own a collection or a basket of them. So sometimes when we see overall negative performance in terms of the valuations of bonds, that's where you see them most distinctly. And so you may be seeing that in bond funds. What does that mean at this point? You know me. When I don't have enough data, I don't like to extrapolate too much. I truly don't know at this point. I don't understand why we're seeing such negative, and I should be less impactful with that. We're having some negative performance in bond valuations. Why is that happening at this point? Don't know, because there is an expectation that we're going to see rates be cut at this point a little bit later on this year by the Federal Reserve. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in a later version of what's hot here. But let's pivot into a big one right here. And it has some to do with the bond market, but it really has more to do with the commodities market. And that has to do with the price of oil. Yeah, I'm looking at West Texas Intermediate. I'm looking at Brent crude. Those are the two most commonly quoted mediums for an instrument of oil, even though nobody really trades barrels much anymore, for sure, in terms of taking the physical possession of them. But when we're looking at the pricing aspect of things, I'm looking at West Texas Intermediate, or WTI, as priced there in Cushing's, Oklahoma, bumping in again close to $90 a barrel. And that's kind of interesting. That's the highest we've seen since October of last year. And I say it's interesting, A, because oil is the most, no pun intended, liquid commodity that's out there in terms of what's traded here in the U.S. And so we see a lot of movement in the terms of the number of barrels of oil in a given day, which are traded. And so when we're bumping into $90 a barrel, where that has most relevance, folks, I'm looking at the gas pumps. I'm looking at how we fill our cars, and we're starting to see those prices creep up again. Now, they haven't gone to where they were, meaning we're not at any kind of supply crunch issues at this point. And we really haven't had significant amounts of geopolitical risk or geopolitical pricing, if you will, baked into that price, in my opinion, at this point, meaning we haven't had a single or a couple of significant geopolitical events which seem to have invoked fear into the market from a supply standpoint. But we're seeing it out there. So we're going to keep watching that. $90 for a barrel of West Texas Intermediate, it's unclear to me at this point what the strong reasons are for that. But because we were just floating around in the mid-70s there not too long ago, that's a pretty notable percentage in terms of movement for the price of a barrel of oil here in just a short amount of time. All right, we're going to keep going here on what's hot. Talking about going to the grocery store. So you know me, I like to talk about things that are relevant to you, the kinds of things that impact you, me, my family, your family on a day-to-day kind of basis. So we talked about the gas pumps there. Now I'm looking at the grocery store. Looked at an article here just recently in an analysis that was tied to it, which has to do with the average price increases in our grocery stores here over the last 5 years. Now, obviously, when I'm saying that, I'm including the time of COVID, which was a very abnormal time in so many ways from an economic standpoint. But it was intentional in looking at this particular time frame, because the 5 years included the time, obviously, right before COVID in 2020 there, up to and including the current time. The average increase, I don't need to tell you this, but it's now, let's call it semi-scientific with regards to this particular analysis that I was perusing, that 37% increase in terms of the average grocery store bill between 2019 and 2024. And in many instances, it's significantly more than that. Looking especially at the meat counter, looking especially at the produce aisle. And, you know, I say that, though, but even a lot of our CPG goods or our shelf-stable kinds of things as well have had 40, 50, 60% increases or more. Actually, another commodity, not nearly as liquid as the oil market, but cocoa. And cocoa being one of the primary ingredients for chocolate is up over 400% here in the last 5 years. It's outrageous. And that has led to obviously significant increases, not only in chocolate, but other candy and confectionery products. It's huge. It has a huge impact, especially on our day-to-day, month-to-month kind of budgetary kinds of things. So it's big. And I'll share just a brief word of commentary from my standpoint. I don't see it increasing anytime soon. I don't think it's going to continue to increase at the same rate that we've seen here over the last 5 years, meaning I don't think that we're going to see these kinds of huge jumps in terms of the expense of the grocery store experience. But I don't see that it's going to be coming down, meaning I don't see a retraction at this point. I just see that the growth rate is probably going to slow down a little bit here over the next year or two. So I wish I had better news for you. I wish I had data that I could share with you that would be much more encouraging on that kind of thing. But at least at this point, I don't. And that is the world in which we live at this point. So again, watch yourself when you're going to the grocery store. Watch yourself when you're going to the gas pump as well. Again, as we're seeing prices increasing here, especially with the cost of a barrel of oil when it comes to the gas pump. All right, going to make a pivot here. Now, you know, I feel like I've been talking about food here quite a bit already in today's Dollars and Cents show and talking grocery stores and those kinds of things. And now I'm going to keep going. We like talking about food here. Producer Bill, I was reading an analytic. This is from a group of researchers in Belgium. You may know where I'm going with this, since I've said Belgium. It's probably one of two things, either chocolate or beer. And I'm going the beer route. And I'm saying this. You're with me so far.
You have my attention, yes.
So there are a group of researchers, and these are true scientists, not someone like me who maybe is calling it research whenever I'm sampling maybe one of our local beers or two, but an actual group of scientific researchers in Brussels, Belgium, and the reason for the article and the commentary on it, who are starting to use AI or artificial intelligence to help them to understand which aromas are most palatable to us when we're drinking beer. Meaning they're running these scenarios through artificial intelligence metrics to be able to figure out, frankly, what we think is most palatable. And on the one hand, I was amazed by that. But then on the other hand, I was thinking, well, shoot, that may take away one of the most perfect jobs ever. Whenever I was thinking about that, because wouldn't you like to be the person who's the official taste tester?
Right.
For that kind of thing.
Right. Talk now, about I've been training my whole life inadvertently.
It's and we didn't even know it. We didn't even know that we've been training for that kind of thing, becoming experts in that arena. And now here's AI looking to take away one of the few jobs perhaps that we have left.
Right. It is nice to see AI being used for some good right there. I mean, the important stuff.
Well, it is important, but I'd be interested to hear your thoughts to this, Producer Bill, as well. I have some skepticism about whether AI can, at least for the masses, be able to, for lack of a better term, predict that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a scary world if they can.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
pretty
and
terrifying.
I know there are some, right, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, that. Just pretty terrifying stuff right there that they can do. Amazing.
And there are some things, exactly. There are some things that we can figure out from a chemical standpoint. I mean, when we talk about the appeal of sugar, for example, and what it produces chemically in our brains that makes it appealing to us. I mean, I understand there are some things chemically, but for the masses, I think that's kind of interesting that they're using AI to be able to predict what kind of beers we the masses may like. And before the listening audience get too concerned about where we're going with this, remember the beer industry. Now this is worldwide. Okay, so I mean I am quantifying in large numbers here. Worldwide, $750 billion per year. Yes, that's $750 billion a year. We're talking about big financial impacts here. And it grows at a roughly 4 to 6. Yeah, exactly. It grows at a roughly 4 to 6% compounded annual rate in terms of sales and revenue generation on there. So you're talking about some huge numbers here. It's not going to be too long. I mean, inside of the next several years, we're going to be up over $1 trillion a year in terms of the revenue generated by beer. And wait until I tell you, and this is another segment for another show at another time. Wait until I tell you that they're by no means the fastest growing segment of the alcohol consumption industry. It's actually whiskey, and not only here in the U.S. but around the world. Whole other segment on that. We'll definitely use that in another Dollars and Cents show. But Producer Bill, I appreciate your insight to that and your agreement that that there is some skepticism about the viability of AI to replace what we thought was one of our best jobs here. Excellent. All right, well, we're going to keep going here on what's hot here. Got to bring up a big one. And this, you know, just before we go to break here, I'm going to get into it in the third quarter of today's show, talking about Disney and specifically the proxy fight. Nelson Peltz, who is a large-scale investor, was making a proxy fight against Disney. It has failed, meaning he has failed to get his seats on the board in order to change some of the management at Disney, wanting to make some changes at Disney, thinking that the stock is undervalued, and what that actually means then for the Disney company. Kind of interesting. I mean, it was a head-to-head battle. Very, very interesting in terms of the outcome from it. We're going to talk a little bit more about that as we get into the second half of the show. We're going to keep going on what's hot here. But I'm, again, going to take a deep breath as we take a moment to hear from our sponsors here on WSIC Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial.
There's more of Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie on the way from 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Making your money make sense. Dollars and Cents with CFP Joshua Dobie on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us into the second half of today's show. Appreciate you hanging with us on the stretch run here as you're looking at the 5 o'clock hour and the end of your day as we're giving attention to all things economic and financial here. Hopefully touching on some things which are specifically relevant to you, part of your experience, family, colleagues' experiences, either currently in the past or perhaps coming up yet ahead of you. And we certainly hope we can be helpful in that case. All right, as we were going to break there, we were talking about Disney. And I touch on Disney because they are a huge, huge company, but also because you may or may not be aware that the Walt Disney Corporation, by the way, ticker symbol DIS, David, Indigo, Sam, not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold Disney in any way. But in looking at Disney, they are into many, many things. They're not just amusement parks and, you know, kids' movies. But they are in really all segments of the entertainment industry on just about every single level, if you can imagine it. They probably own several entities that you know by other names, but which are actually under the Walt Disney umbrella. For example, the ESPN Sports Network, that actually is under the Walt Disney umbrella, meaning owned by Walt Disney. So it's one of those things that you don't think about perhaps all that much, but it is definitely a huge corporation, huge impact from an economic standpoint in terms of their relevance to the day-to-day. So kind of interesting on the proxy fight there. Bob Iger, who has been, hasn't been, now has been again, the CEO over there at Walt Disney, now back in the hold there, and looks like he's going to be looking for a successor. I think Nelson Peltz, the activist investor, was wanting to move that along a little bit faster. Didn't happen. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. All right, fun fact here. Just one of those on this date kinds of things. And I say that because of the medium that we're using here for Dollars and Cents, whether you're watching us on the socials, you're hearing us over the internet, or you're listening to us over the airwaves. Just kind of interesting when we're thinking about the relevance here. On this date, 1877, the first regular telephone line went into service. Yes, I'm talking about the Alexander Graham Bell end of things. 1877, the first regular telephone line went into service on this date. Well, we've come a long way. It hasn't been all that long. I know 1877 seems like a long time ago, but you think about how much progress we've made since that time and the kinds of things that we're doing now here today, whether you're talking about streaming kinds of things, online kinds of things, and how quickly things move, especially from a data standpoint. Pretty impressive stuff. All right, we're going to continue on what's hot here. And I'm going to talk about this because received several phone calls, emails, text messages regarding it. And then also I have seen it now in several different online publications. And it's actually a study that was put out by Northwestern Mutual. Northwestern Mutual, huge insurance company. You may have heard of them. They often have commercials on television and the radio as well. Huge, huge, huge insurance company. Put out a survey, or excuse me, a result of a survey, meaning that they took survey of thousands of different folks about the amount of money that they believe they would need to retire. Now, I'm going to say this with a bunch of huge caveats up front. And I'm actually going to keep caveating probably all the way through my discussion on this. But I want to address it because I've now heard from a number of you with regards to this particular survey. Everybody's situation is unique. We focus a lot, and I'm going to point at myself, especially my industry. We focus a lot on the accumulation process. How much have you saved for retirement? We don't talk enough, in my opinion, about all the other aspects that go into the retirement planning process. Specifically, well, what's your overhead? Meaning, what are your actual fixed costs going into retirement? Are they high? Well, you can have a big pile of money, but if you have a lot of fixed costs, it may not feel like you're in a very comfortable place. On the other hand, if your fixed costs are significantly lower, then you may not need to accumulate as much money in order to live very comfortably in retirement. That's a very, very important point. We pound on that a lot at North Main Financial Group because, again, and I point at our industry, we're guilty of focusing just on that one number and saying, okay, if you get to this number, then you're going to be comfortable. That's not true. It just isn't true. So that's why I'm giving you all these caveats up front. But I do want to address this particular survey, which was done out there, about how much money you need to retire. So the number that they came up with as a result of this survey among X number of thousand of people was $1.5 million, which is a huge number. It truly is. That's a big, big number. It's especially huge when you look at the average 401k, or let me branch that out a little bit. The average savings for retirement by folks who are getting ready to retire in this country, you may not know. I mean, well, I'll producer Bill, I'll put you on the spot here on this one. What do you think is the average retirement savings for folks who are getting ready to retire in this country? We're talking about everybody here. I know, I'll put you right on the spot. You're gonna have to pull the rabbit out of the hat on this.
Right, one. Right. I mean, I would hope $200,000. I have no idea. I have no idea.
I shouldn't. I wish. No, I wish, producer Bill. I wish it was $200,000.
I thought we were still in 1877.
You know what? Yeah, I mean, I wish you were correct. The right number is actually less than half of that.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's actually,
this is good news.
Yeah, it's $89,000 is the average amount that folks have saved for retirement.
Oh, okay.
So it's when we're looking at that, I mean, I wish it was better news. I wish I could say, well, no, folks are actually way ahead of the curve.
And
they're doing wonderfully
well.
It's
dawning on
me. But
actually,
yeah, I mean, I think really what we're seeing, though, and this is a trend that we've seen, especially, I'll say, over the last 30 to 40 years, as retirement savings have pivoted dramatically from an abundance of more pension-style retirements to more what we call self-directed-style retirement savings, meaning 401ks, 403bs, IRAs, those kinds of things. And that has really widened the gap, if you will, because it has gone more from a mandatory sort of savings kind of space, which was largely run by large employers, to a space where it was incumbent upon the individual. It is incumbent upon the individual to be able to make those savings for retirement. I would say, and I don't want to get too caught up in the numbers here, but we see this a lot at North Main Financial Group. There's a huge gap, meaning there's a huge gap between what folks need to save and how much they have saved. And that's really the concerning point. It's a big macro trend. It didn't just start this year or with this survey or anything like that. I just found it interesting about what the perception was, that huge number, that perception was in terms of what folks think that they need to have in retirement and how much on average folks actually have saved. Now, again, that's not taking into account Social Security. It's not taking into account those folks who do have pensions or other forms of income, whether it's real estate or other kinds of things. It's not taking into account any of that. So, like I said, lots of caveats here in terms of how we're looking at this. But I will say, from what we see at North Main Financial Group, that there is a pretty big chasm between, generally speaking, when we're looking at society as a whole, what folks need to retire and how much has actually been saved. So something important to keep in mind, but hear this, just like I started, I'm going to end this point in the exact same way. Everybody's situation is unique. It's not true that just because you and a friend of yours have the exact same amount saved for retirement, that you're going to have the same experience. Just not true. And so it's very, very important to keep in mind. Lots of other factors involved there. Definitely want to take a look at reaching out to your tax advisor, your financial advisor. You're welcome to reach out to us at northmainfinancial.com as well. All right, let's keep going here. On the what's hot segment end of things, the Federal Reserve. I got to talk about them again, and I know it's not exactly the most riveting cocktail hour conversation to think about, but we got to talk about the Federal Reserve. And I have to say it from this standpoint: at the end of last year, I know you've heard me say this a lot, but at the end of last year, there was an anticipation by the trading public, by the markets, that there would be as many as seven, count them, seven rate cuts this year. Which, again, I told you then, I'll tell you now, and it's not, this is not an I told you so kind of moment, but I just thought that was just preposterous. There's no meaningful historical context to think that that was going to happen. Well, that number from a trading in the market standpoint has shrunk from now 7 to 2. And I still don't see how we're going to get 2 rate cuts in this year. And I'm not trying to predict the future or anything like that. This is just 29 years of doing this kind of thing and watching the markets in this way. I really don't see where we're going to have space to have 2 rate cuts. Maybe we have space to have 1, but none of the data which are coming through are indicating that there is this huge drop in inflation. Yes, it has mediated. It has dropped a lot from that hyperinflation number we had 2 years ago. But we are in no way in a space where we are anything close to deflationary, and we are still running very hot from an inflationary standpoint in several different pockets of our economy. So when I'm looking at that and looking at the possibility for rate cuts, at this point, I just don't see it. And it's possible we could have one towards the end of the year. I think that's what some folks are making some suppositions at this point, that may happen. In terms of a possibility of a single rate cut at this year, but the trading markets at this point are still anticipating 2, and depending upon which futures you're trading, are looking at even the possibility of 3. I'm just doing the math on the number of Federal Reserve meetings between now and the end of the year, and I'm not sure how that math goes together. So looking at it, it's important. And so you may say, what does the Federal Reserve have to do with me? Fair question. In terms of direct impact, I would say not a whole lot in your day-to-day, but they absolutely do impact interest rates on everything. And I mean everything. Yes, I'm looking at your student loans. I'm looking at your credit cards, your mortgages, your auto loans, basically anything with an interest rate associated with it, savings accounts, money market accounts, CDs. It's not a one-to-one impact or a direct impact on those kinds of things, meaning it doesn't happen in direct correlation or lockstep with what the Federal Reserve does. But there is absolutely a differential or an impact point that comes with the Federal Reserve making those moves. So that's why I spend the time on it. It's important, and I want you to be aware of it, especially if it happens to happen here as we get a little bit later on in the year. Well, friends, I'm going to take a deep breath as we wind up to get ready for the fourth quarter of today's show. Appreciate so much you hanging with us here on WSIC, here on Dollars and Cents.
Dollars and Cents with your host, certified financial planner Joshua Dobie, continues straight ahead on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Call now to speak with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie at 844-STUDIO-4. It's Dollars and Cents on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us into the fourth quarter football reference. Appreciate you hanging with us here as we're getting on the stretch run. If you're a 5 o'clock guy or gal, you're looking at 11 minutes, 52 seconds until the finish line here. I appreciate so much you tuning in to us here on WSIC as we're giving attention to all things economic and financial. All right. You know, I like to save the market stuff for last. I know that's highest on your radar screen. Let's go ahead and dig into it a little bit. First quarter. I mean, now we got the first quarter of 2024 behind us, ready or not. It has already hit the back burner, if you will, and very positive as measured by our most popular stock indices. Now, you heard me talking about the bond market a little bit earlier in today's show, talking about how, as again, measured by our most popular bond market indices, it has been a negative year to date. But insofar as the equity markets are concerned, again, by and large, a positive start to the year, powered by a lot of the same things that did very well towards the end of last year. So I'm looking, yes, at big technology companies, but not all of them. Very interesting. For example, I'm going to pick on one just because they happen to be one of the most well-known, largest companies out there, one of the most widely held, Apple. Apple was down over 10% here in the first quarter of this year. So not nearly the same kind of glistening return that we've seen from some other companies, say like a Meta or like an Amazon. But when we're looking at or Nvidia, also another huge quarter that came through this past quarter. So when we're looking at, you know, what that means in terms of overall market performance, that would make me a little bit queasy, except for what I'm going to say next, that we've actually started to see a little bit of broadening of the breadth. Now, before you get too caught up in that alliteration there, what we're talking about here are a larger number of companies and a larger number of sectors which are performing well. So it's not just this ultra narrow band of companies, frankly, like we had last year in 2023, this ultra narrow band of companies or style of companies that have done well, but we're starting to see some broadening. You heard me talk about in the last segment how we've got WTI, West Texas Intermediate, a barrel of oil, bumping up close to $90 a barrel. That has resulted, at least in the short run here, in some positive movement in the oil and energy sector or oil and energy companies. Wasn't true last year in 2023, but we're starting to see some broadening there. We're also starting to see some broadening in terms of positive performance into the financial sector. I'm looking at big money center banks. Think JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. I'm looking at regional banks. So not all of them, again, not all of the big money center banks, not all of the regional banks are doing well, but some broadening to see some positive performance in those areas. Friends, I got to share with you that what that tends to indicate in the short run is some strength or resiliency in the market, meaning that it tends to indicate a healthier marketplace when there is increased participation in positive movements. Now, does that mean that nothing bad can happen? No, I'm not saying that at all. Does that mean that we aren't due for a pullback? You've heard me say we're due for a pullback probably for 6 months now, if not longer. I'm not saying that any of that may or may not be at a higher probability level, but what I am saying is that relative to the most recent clip of performance here, this is a healthier kind of space in terms of overall market performance than, frankly, what we saw last year. And I'm not trying to look a gift horse in the proverbial mouth when I say that. What I'm saying is that narrow market performance, or when relatively few companies are powering the overall performance of the market, that doesn't tend to indicate good market health. However, when we get other sectors involved, you've heard me say financials now, you've heard me say oil and energy, I'm going to point to utilities also doing well in this market. Real estate has lagged, and that's a whole other segment talking about where commercial real estate is right now in terms of vacancy. We've talked about that on previous shows. I know we're going to be talking about that again, so I'm not including that in the mix of things. But overall, when you look at the resiliency in this market, fairly positive. So when we're looking forward, then, and I have to add another one to the mix. Oh my gosh, before I get too carried away here, gold. If you happen to be one who owns gold, either in a securitized asset like a fund or in an ETF, or if you actually own the gold bullion, or you have gold bars yourself, we have seen a notable increase or a notable appreciation in the commodity of gold as well. That also tends to be, in conjunction with these other factors, tends to be an indication of greater market health. Now, there are other factors that have to do with gold as well. Sometimes it's looked upon as an inflationary protection. I would argue in an academic sense that may or may not be true anymore because of how gold is used in our society, but it's certainly used as an alternative asset or an alternative investment, and it has also had some positive performance. So when we're looking at that, and then we're attempting to understand what the go forward is, or what the, let's say, the balance of this year in terms of market performance is, I know that's the multi-trillion dollar question that everybody wants to be able to answer well. I'll tell you, I have fewer concerns than I did to start the year. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not due for a technical pullback. When I say technical pullback, that essentially means when you've been going above the average for a significant amount of time, at a certain point, you have to run below the average for an amount of time in order to get, wait for it, the average. That's a technical pullback. We're due for that. But we've been due for that for some time now. That's still out there ahead of us. I don't know, obviously, when that may take place, but we're still due for that kind of thing. But I'm not seeing the ugly kinds of markers that sometimes are a part of our economic experience after a move like the Federal Reserve has made here over the last 18 months to 2 years in terms of increasing interest rates, I haven't seen the ugly kinds of markers that I would anticipate would be in place at this point. Let me point out a couple of big ones. And we're going to get some additional data, jobs data, actually tomorrow, as of the time of this live broadcast or as of the time of this podcast recording, if you happen to be listening to that. So tomorrow, Friday, today being Thursday, we're going to get jobs report data. The data are not expected to be unnaturally out of kilter again. Unemployment still right around 3.8%, significantly below our long-term historical average. We're expected to show that we increased jobs by 150 to 200,000 here in the last month, pretty much in line with expectations. You heard me say this. I like to crow about my winners. I got to raise my hand for the ones that I missed. I anticipated that we would have a significantly higher unemployment rate right now than we do. And when I say significantly, I'm not talking about 10% or anything like that, but we're at 3.8% right now. I anticipated we would be at 4.5 to 5% or higher, slightly higher than that by this point in the cycle relative to where interest rates are. Haven't seen it to this point. I do expect that unemployment is going to creep up perhaps a little bit later on this year, but we haven't seen it to this point. And friends, I thought we would have by this time, especially relative to the proximity of interest rates. And the thought process behind that is relatively straightforward. Really, it's just looking at where costs have escalated so much for employers, whether you're talking about raw material commodity cost, whether you're talking about the cost of labor, the single largest cost on just about every balance sheet that's out there for any business. When you're looking at how much that has increased here over the last several years, I anticipated that we were going to have some measure of unemployment increase. Add to that the cost of capital increase as well, meaning that when companies go to borrow money, it is significantly more expensive for them to go borrow money now, whether it be in the debt markets, the equity markets, or in a standard line of credit from a financing institution. We're talking about a much higher cost of doing business. At least to this point, not all companies, but most companies have been able to pass those costs on through, and the consumer to this point, in most instances, has absorbed them. And so we haven't seen those kinds of reflections, then those negative reflections that someone like me, looking at a long stretch of market history, would have anticipated would be coming out to play at this point. So we're going to keep watching that. That's a big deal. It's a big item that's sitting out there, especially when we're talking unemployment. I know you hear me say this data point a lot. It's real, and it impacts so many things. 3/4 approximately of our GDP, of our economy, of our gross domestic product is a function of consumer spending. Meaning that as consumers slow down in their spending, so slows down the economy. It's not a one-to-one perfect correlation, but it is a huge variable in that algorithm of understanding how GDP growth works in our country. Consumer spending. We are a consumer-driven economy, no doubt about it. So we watch that very, very closely, because if the unemployment rate goes up, very naturally we would expect that overall consumer spending would decline. And that will impact us overall economically in some pretty significant ways. So we're going to continue to watch that in very tight measure here. Another big item that we want to keep in mind here when we're looking at overall economic growth, be mindful of the companies which have run, and you heard me just say this a few moments ago, relative to a technical pullback in the overall market. But now I'm going to look very tightly at some companies which have just run above average for a significant amount of time. Specifically, I'm looking at technology companies. I'm looking at companies like NVIDIA and Meta and Amazon, which have just run way above average now for a significant period of time. Here's another one. I haven't mentioned this one before, Supermicro. And again, this is not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold any of these companies, but Supermicro up 250%+ since January 1st. And yes, they are in the AI semiconductor end of things. And so that probably has played a lot into the growth that they've had here in a very short amount of time. Holy smokes, that's not normal, folks. I wish it was. And I hope you owned Supermicro before they took off here in January, or any of these other big technology companies before they took off here. But I would just throw out a note of caution that this is just not normal. When a stock price increases 30, 40, 50, 60% or more in a quarter, that's not a normal kind of growth rate. That doesn't mean automatically that they're going to pull back, but that's just not a normalized growth rate. And so you want to have an expectation that if it has moved that quickly in the positive, then it may have the possibility of moving that net, that in the negative in the short run as well. Now, good companies are good companies, and over the long term, that will prevail. What I'm really talking about is just understanding in the short run, because what tends to happen, and we're seeing this in some of these high flyers, what tends to happen is folks get real excited as it already has gone up in price, and they start to buy high. And that tends to be a time when it's the worst time to do that. So just a note of caution there. All right, friends. Well, we're going to wrap up our time together here. We're rapidly approaching the end of this week's version of Dollars and Cents. Let's do a lightning fast recap talking about where we've been. First quarter, very positive from a market standpoint. Can't argue with it. Was not expected. It'll be interesting to see how that's going to hold here into the second quarter as we get the dog days of summer out there ahead of us, what that's going to mean. Federal Reserve, are they going to cut rates this year? I think that's still up in the air. A lot of play yet. We still don't know what's going to happen. Well, friends, appreciate so much you hanging with us on this week's version of Dollars and Cents here on WSIC.